it's Paul Ross, and welcome to Subtle Secrets of Super Rapport. These are real-world rapport secrets they won't teach you that will turbocharge your sales. Now, I have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder in this one because when I say they won't teach you, I don't think – first, let me define they. I'm talking about people who train – in neurolinguistic programming or NLP. I have a lot of respect for NLP. It's one of my core disciplines. But what happens is when you go to an NLP training, you encounter what I call seminar syndrome. Now, seminars are fine. I teach them myself. But what often happens with an NLP seminar is you get people who self-select. They've raised their hands by paying lots of money, by flying out, by giving up lots of time. Essentially, they're raising their hands and saying, I want it to work with me. I want it to work on me. I want to do this. Whereas when you get out into the real world, down into the street level, the nitty-gritty where people are not raising their hands, where in fact maybe they're giving you the finger, then things tend to turn out in a much different way, a much different way. So I am someone who really wants to tell you how things actually work in the real world. So let's get to some common and indeed stupid myths about creating rapport. Myth number one, rapport requires you like the other person. That's just not true. I've gotten rapport in so many different situations where I didn't particularly like the person, at least not at first. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not that I look down on people. Everyone deserves basic human dignity. But at that moment, based on their behavior or just whoever they were, I don't necessarily have to like them. And liking them isn't necessarily going to get you rapport. You could like someone who's very angry. It's not going to do diddly squat. Myth two, rapport requires the other person like you. Well, no, it doesn't. I can like someone and still be in a position where I don't agree with them or where I'm thinking they're full of it. You've been in a situation, excuse me, in a personal relationship where you probably loved someone. And in that moment, you were not in rapport with them when they were getting you angry or you were having a strong disagreement or they violated your trust. Myth three, and this is a very common myth, rapport is a result of mirroring and matching posture or gestures. This is ass backwards. You don't get rapport through mirroring and matching posture. You get mirroring and matching when you're in rapport. This is like saying that the exhaust is what causes the engine to run. No, the engine running in the car causes the exhaust. If you look at people who are out on a date or having a great date, whether it's first date, second date, doesn't matter, or couples who are in love, they naturally mirror and match each other. Not because they're trying to, but because they already have that rapport. And myth number four, rapport requires, listen to my term, rapport requires matching sensory predicates. That's auditory, kinesthetic, visual. So for a auditory person, you would say, I can hear what you're saying. I wonder if this sounds like it rings a bell for you. You can take this to ridiculous extremes. Or a visual person, you would say something like, let me paint a clear picture that you can see very vividly and imagine as being true for you. The problem with this is, first of all, everyone uses all of these things. Everyone uses the auditory, kinesthetic, and visual modalities all the time. There's no such thing as a person who only uses one. And as far as preference, yes, there are preferred systems, but it depends on context. If you are in the dark with your lover and the lights are off and you can't see them very well, then maybe it's the kinesthetic element or the sounds they make, the auditory element that takes control. You don't know. So I think this is, while it can be useful, it has to be put in context. And again, this is one of my challenges with traditional NLP and sales trainings that rely on NLP is they don't teach the context in which the tools are meant to work. This is part of the problem. I need to give you a confession. I'm recording this in my home office, and one of my cats is here demanding attention. She does this whenever I'm doing any kind of work recording. So if you hear a meow or two, that's because she just demands attention. That's my real world. I bring it to you just as it happens. I don't edit anything. This is how it is. So what is my definition of rapport? Well, I have a unique definition. Rapport is the willingness and the ability to enter the other person's world in a way that creates a channel of unconscious trust. We're going to unpack that in a minute, but let me say it again. The willingness and the ability to enter the other person's world. You have to be willing to enter their world. Otherwise, you're just throwing techniques at the wall. In a way that creates a channel of unconscious trust. My fundamental definition of rapport is a channel of unconscious trust. Now let's consider a metaphor. I love teaching metaphors. Let's say you have some electric current and you want to conduct it. And you have a choice, a sheet of cardboard and a sheet of gold foil. Your degree of rapport is the conductive medium and your communication is the current. Does that metaphor make sense? Here's the essence of effective real-world rapport. Relaxed awareness and flexibility with your analogs. So relaxed awareness and flexibility with your analogs. This is the essence of effective real-world rapport. You probably never heard this definition before, but like I said, this is unique stuff. So let's examine each of these elements. Relaxed awareness. By this, I mean a neutral state. So you're not super excited or pumped up, nor are you nervous or anxious. It's neutral. Never underestimate the power of neutrality with a little bit of a sense of humor wrapped around it, just a little bit. So what is a neutral state comprised of? What are the elements? Number one, an outward focus of attention. Your attention is focused outward on the other person. Second, this goes along with it, a relatively quiet mind. So you don't have a lot of internal dialogue chattering away in your head. Oh, is this going to work? Well, why aren't I doing this? They're not responding that way. We're never going to get rid of internal dialogue, and for that matter, we don't want to, because it has its purpose and it has its place. It's just when you're dealing with someone in a delicate situation like selling or negotiations or influence or persuasion, you want your mind, listen to what I said, relatively quiet. And you want to be grounded in your body. You have to have some relative degree of awareness of what your body feels like. I often, in my live events or personal trainings, whatever it is, teach an exercise where you literally put 20 to 30% of your attention of your feet, of the feeling of your feet on the ground. So 80% of your attention is on what else is going on around you, but you put some of your attention on your feeling of the feet on the ground. So that sort of modifies element number one, an outward focus of attention. 80% of your attention is focused outward. Put 20% of your attention on the feeling of your feet on the ground and see what that does for you. And if you're sitting down, then it's your butt in the chair. And you'll notice what that does, both in the quality of your awareness and the quality of your communication and how people receive you. Simple technique like that makes a huge difference. And I want to say neutral does not mean being pumped up or in a peak state. I think the people who teach this peak state stuff should be slapped and hung by their ankles. Peak states, they're great if you're walking on fire, which, by the way, we'll get to that. Walking on fire essentially relies on the difference between temperature and conductivity. So you can have hot coals, but they don't conduct heat the way frying pans do. So if you put down metal frying pans and try to walk across them, that conductive medium would fry your feet. So there we are back on that metaphor. But peak states are handy dandy for walking on fire, excuse me, or leading a group of 40,000 sheeple from the stage. So if you're Tony Robbins, nothing against Tony, and you've got 40,000 people, you better be who are listening to you and you're pumping them up. You better be in a peak state. But if you're with a potential client and you come run in like, yes, like Tony Robbins, they're going to perceive you as a maniac, and accurately and rightly so. And only a maniac wants to deal with a maniac. So flexibility, and this is the law of requisite variety. This is something taken from cybernetics. And the law says in any system, it is the element with the most variety of responses that has the most control. Think of the implications of that. In any system, whether that's a system of human communication or a system of electronic switches or whatever it is, or an ecosystem, it's the element with the most variety of responses that has the most control. So this is what I mean by flexibility. I mean variety in the responses, the variety you have in your responses. So what's an analog? An analog is any phenomena or activity that varies along a range. So imagine, for example, a light switch. There's the kind of light switch where you switch it on or off. That's digital. We're not talking about that. Analog would be like a dimmer switch. You can dim the lights or you can make them brighter. Or a speaker where you can adjust the volume. I don't know if you're someone who saw the movie Spinal Tap. If you didn't, I suggest you rent it. I don't know if it's on Amazon or Netflix. Hilarious movie. But the interviewer is saying to one of the rock and rollers, the heavy metal rock and rollers, I see your amps go all the way up to 11. Why don't you just make 10 louder? And the rock and roller says, all go up to 11. So that's an example of an analog volume. That's an analog. So here are the analogs to be aware of in yourself and your prospect. This is much more important than their sensory predicates. Just toss auditory predicates, visual, kinesthetic. I don't care what they say in traditional NLP. You want to be aware of in yourself and your prospect the volume of your speech, the pace of your speaking. So for example, if you all are speaking with Southerner, I know this is exaggerated, but tend to speak at a much slower pace. Whereas New Yorker's going to talk like this, like, what are you talking about? Get the hell out of my way. There's my dog. I'm not much of a dialect person, but I'm doing my best here. Like I said, it's very late at night. The pace, frequency, and duration of pausing. This is something that is just not taught anywhere except right here. So you want to pace how people pause. For example, normally when I'm teaching, I will put in pauses like this. So for example, if I'm speaking from the stage, there'll be moments when I speak very quickly as I put a point across. But then when I ask for questions, I'll say, does that make sense? So look for the pace and the variation and the duration of the other person's pausing. This is a super rapport secret because this is really picked up on the unconscious level and is completely undetectable. The only thing you learn differently in this video is how to pace, how to notice, first of all, pausing, and you want to pace the frequency and the duration of pausing. So the number of times someone pauses and how long those pauses last. Breathing. So watch the shoulders, not the belly. Don't be staring at someone's belly. Not a good idea. And then I'm using this as a metaphor in quotes, quote, energy, close quotes, energy level. So if someone's kind of, your prospect is not super enthusiastic, don't come in there bouncing off the walls. That's not going to work. So here's advanced rapport secrets, getting immediate rapport from the stage. Now, in the main body of the course, we talk about implied relationship words. We, together, share, promise. Here's an example. Before we begin this amazing journey into the world of influence together, I'd like to ask you to promise me one thing. Will you promise me you'll share the questions that naturally occur when a great learning is taking place? Now, we, together, promise and share are what I call implied relationship words. These words imply a relationship. So if I had said in this example, before I begin this amazing journey into the world of influence, I'd like to ask you to please share, please ask any questions that naturally come up. I'm leaving out the words that imply a relationship. And implying a relationship is even deeper than implying rapport. A relationship implies rapport. And what you imply is very hypnotic and very powerful. It cannot be resisted. Advanced rapport secret number two, use vague language to give the perception you deeply understand them. You don't actually have to understand anything about them or everything about them. Just make them feel like you do. So here's an example. I didn't bother writing it down. I'm going to make this up as we go. All right. As you're following along with this lesson, I just want to say, I don't know at what points, as you watch it a second time, you'll find yourself being able to just stop and imagine using even some of these techniques to get amazing results. But as that's taking place, I just feel so great to be sharing this learning with you together, even though I haven't personally met you yet. So what you may want to do is pause that, listen to it multiple times, and even write it out by hand so you can see. I didn't say anything specific. You had to fill in the blanks with your own imagination. And this is what we call a syntactically well-formed sentence. Even though the content may be vague, the grammar is correct. So the unconscious mind says, okay, I'll accept all that. And here's some more examples. Before we get going on this journey of exploring the world of rapport together, I can't be the one to say at which points you'll find yourself getting more and more excited at what you're learning. What I would like to say is you're the only one who can discover for yourself just what it is that might make you stop and imagine all the ways you'll benefit from what I'm about to present. Now this, I want to say, when I was first exposed to it, I instantly understood the beauty of it, and at the same time I felt, wow, this is really complex. But one way to learn this is just listen to the audio over and over and over and over again till you get the cadence and you get the rhythm. A good piece of persuasive patter is like a composition. It has harmony, it's a melody, it has a tempo and a beat to it. Before we get going on this journey of exploring the world of rapport together, I can't be the one to say at which points you'll find yourself getting more and more excited at what you're learning. What I would like to say is you're the only one who can discover for yourself just what it is that might make you stop and imagine all the ways you'll benefit from what I'm about to present. See, people will only trust you're an authority on the topic where they should be after they trust you on you're an authority on where they currently are. Let me put it a better way. People will only trust you're an authority on where they should be after they trust you're an authority on where they currently are. To put it even differently, it's not the person with the best perceived answer that first gets attention. It's the person who is the best perceived accurate diagnosis. And so when you speak vaguely like that, and the people fill in the blanks with their own imagination, they will get the perception that you fully understand them, when in fact you may know nothing about them. So there's the ability. It's a very advanced thing that requires its own training. It would require probably a day or even a weekend to train you to speak in vague language. But you see the possibility and the potential. Now, if need be, pace and inoculate. And this is something, again, that you would do on stage. In this sense, it's what a good trial attorney does when faced with a piece of evidence that could hurt his or her case. They get ahead of it. A good trial attorney will always present a piece of evidence that looks bad for their side. They'll present it first so they can put a frame around it and define what it means. So if you've ever had the opportunity to hear me speak live, I'll often, based on my audience's level and degree of private exposure to my material, I'll pace the possible responses they have to what I'm about to teach. That's not meant to be the example. That's just me saying the way it works. So my intent is, I know what I'm going to teach an audience. If they're not familiar with my work, they're going to have just one of three possible responses. So here's the pattern I will typically use. Folks, before we get going exploring this remarkable world of persuasion together, there are just a few things I want to tell you about the three possible responses to what you're about to learn. Some of it you'll think, well, that's not so unusual. It's what I'm already doing. I can do that. Some of it you'll think, okay, that's a little bit off the wall, but I'm, you know, it's not so out there. I can see yourself trying it on. But folks, most of what I'm going to teach will at first seem so far out there, maybe even a bit wacky, you might think, okay, Paul is off his rocker. No way that could work or I could pull that off. Now, should that come up, that's where I want to invite you to challenge yourself to get really excited, because it's the very ways of thinking, believing, and acting that stand so far outside of what you're used to doing that hold the potential for you to experience results so far beyond what you're used to enjoying. Does that make sense? So do you see what I've done here? I've covered the possible responses, because those are the three possible responses. They'll think, I can already do it, or that's not so far out, I'll give it a shot, or that's really out there. And in my case, when I teach, oftentimes at first people think that's really out there, because I'm really out there. I'm standing outside the traditional way of doing things. So I've covered all the possible responses, and I've taken the most likely to be disrupted to my outcome, which is they're thinking, I'm off my rocker. I'm not going to listen to that guy any further. I'm taking that response, and I'm tying it to the response I want them to have. And by the way, that's the response that serves them best. It doesn't serve them to just have me give into their autopilot response of shutting down. I want to open up their minds. Remember, to me, persuasion and influence is about expanding the other person's consciousness to include new ideas. That's the job of a master teacher as well. Now, if I want to supercharge it, I'll toss in a metaphor. Metaphors are powerful. I should do a training just on metaphor. Folks, it's just like Christopher Columbus. What did they tell Columbus would happen if he kept on stalling? And I always allow them to participate by answering. That's right. He'd sail off the edge of the earth. But did he? No. He sailed off the edge of their map. And in doing so, he found a new world and earned the right to write the map for everyone else. So do you hear that metaphor? I'm giving them the metaphor that they're going to sail off their map. So be okay, be cool. I'm going to sail off your map with you, and we're going to find a new world together. I like to say a master teacher doesn't just take people outside their comfort zone. He takes them outside of their conceptual zone. See, if all you do is get outside your comfort zone, but you carry the same concepts with you, great, you made yourself uncomfortable for a while. So what? You also need to get out of your conceptual zone. And that's what a master teacher and trainer does. Now, let's talk about cold calling and rapport. Let's reframe this. And I want to say this is not a training on creating phone sales scripts. There's trainings out there. I don't do this kind of thing. Use what you'll learn here with any existing scripts you have, and you'll up your success massively. This is not meant to be a replacement. It's a turbocharger. So with that understanding in mind, let's have a look. It all starts with your metaphor. Let's change the cold call metaphor. Metaphors are powerful. A metaphor bridges the old way of understanding the world to a new and more empowering way. So let's get literal. When people come to work with me for change work, whatever it is, and they say, I have approach anxiety, et cetera, et cetera, I'll say, really? Or people come to me and they say, you know, I was doing some great selling calls on people, and then I hit a wall. I'll say, really? Did you call 911? They say, no, not that kind of wall, a wall of fear. I'll say, really? What color was the wall? Was it shimmering like one of those force fields on Star Trek? And then they always laugh and say, no, I just made myself afraid. So now they've gone through the metaphor of, from the metaphor of something outside of themselves that's an object in it or a thing over which they have no power, to recognizing that they were doing an activity that wasn't serving them. So let's ask, is your phone literally cold? Do you have to wear gloves to pick that phone up? Is your prospect a freezing minus 15 degrees? Is there really an actual physical layer of ice between you and your prospect? Whoever came up with that metaphor, cold calling, really, I don't know, what the hell were they thinking? Let's change the metaphor and change the meaning. When you change the metaphor, you change the meaning. When you change the meaning, you change and charge your momentum. That was really good. When you change the metaphor, you change the meaning. When you change the meaning, you change and charge your momentum. So how about this? I never make cold calls. I extend opportunities. Oh, I never make cold calls. I do opportunity outreaches. How would you feel if you sat down at your desk and thought, how many opportunity outreaches am I going to allow myself to enjoy doing today? Instead of, God damn it, I've got to make cold calls. How many of these cold calls am I going to have to make? I never beg for change. I offer opportunity frames. Of these, I like the second one. I never make cold calls. I do opportunity outreaches. I love that. take that away with you. Take that second one. You will, that alone, bingo, that's a diamond. Here's another reframe. How many unqualified prospects can I quickly eliminate today? I like that one. How many unqualified prospects can I quickly eliminate today? Let's look at the struggle frame when it comes to quote, cold, close quote calls. This sucks. I shouldn't have to do this. I don't want to do this. Screw cold calling. I should do more of these. Here you're shitting on yourself saying you should do it. How about a choice frame? I'm choosing to make my opportunity outreaches. Notice the ownership word, my. Not I'm choosing to make opportunity outreaches. I'm choosing to make my opportunity outreaches. Much more powerful when you add in that ownership language. I'm choosing to joyfully keep right on going. See that adverb? Throw in the adverb. It makes things much more powerful. I'm choosing to keep right on going, or I'm choosing to joyfully keep right on going. Adverbs are powerful. They can do whatever they want. I choose how I respond. So this takes care of that potential fear that you make up in your mind that they're going to yell at you. And even if they do, so what? It's electronic noise coming through a phone receiver. That's all it is. And trick your mind with the Milton Erickson mental reset method. There's a picture of Milton Erickson. Erickson was, in my opinion, to hypnosis what Einstein was to physics. He revolutionized the entire world of hypnosis. Now, Erickson had a client who was a pretty good golfer, but he wanted to improve his game. And after talking to him for a while, interviewing him, Milton Erickson had the insight that this guy was just focusing on the number of shots he had already made. And he was thinking of the number of shots ahead of him. So if he was on the fourth hole, he'd think, damn it, I have 14 more holes to go. So Erickson hypnotized him so that his entire focus was only on that one shot he was making. There was no past. There was no future, just that one shot. So each time you pick up that phone, that's a reset. It's the only call you ever are going to make that day, the only call you have made, and the only call you ever will have made. Reset yourself that way. Now, what if they get nasty? use this one with caution. You may just want to say thanks, have a great day, and hang up. But every once in a while, if you really want to have some fun and you know it's going south, do what I call Spocking them. That's after the famous character, Mr. Spock from Star Trek. If you've never seen Star Trek, I'm so sorry for you. Google Mr. Spock. But he was the Vulcan, the alien from the planet Vulcan, who felt no emotion. He was completely calm, completely rational, never showed any emotions. So watch this. Them, you mother fudging clack soccer. And you would say, so like, what are you trying to say? I said, sheet it and die. And in a whisper, you'd say, I'm sorry, can you speak up? I'm not getting your point. So the angrier and nastier they get, the calmer you become. So yeah, 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 yeah. So like, what are you trying to say? And the other response is, I'm sorry, can you speak up? I'm not getting your point. This is just something, it's probably better for you to just say, thanks, have a great day, and hang up, or they'll probably hang up on you. But if you really want to have some fun and make yourself laugh like crazy, just Spock them. So here's some subtle secrets of phone rapport that are just like face-to-face rapport. Same thing. Match your prospect's rate of speaking. Obviously, if they're slow speakers, you don't want to speak really quickly. You'll overwhelm them. If they're quick speakers and you speak very slowly, you'll bore them to tears. Match their volume. Match the frequency of pausing. You won't learn that anywhere else, the frequency and duration, and their breathing. Well, how do you match breathing on the phone? If they're speaking, they're exhaling. Here's a trick. Inhale and try to speak as you're inhaling. Doesn't work. So I really hope you've enjoyed this module. And of course, there's the information there. Please let me know your thoughts and ask any questions. I always love talking to my students and trainees. This is the joy of my life. Thank you.